Today's podcast is sponsored by Midi Health. At any given time, 61% of adult women say they want to lose weight. But for many, that's easier said than done. If you've had trouble losing weight, don't lose hope. Midi Health uses a deep understanding of women's hormones and a combination of weight loss medications to create a customized plan for each user. Midi Health can help you achieve more effective and sustainable weight loss by addressing hormone imbalances. Midi can also prescribe proven weight loss medications that help you experience reduced appetite and increased feelings of fullness. When paired with hormone optimization, you're not just managing your weight, you're also supporting your body's natural processes, which means you can overcome those weight loss plateaus that in the past have been so difficult to move beyond. So if you're ready to combine the power of hormones with the power of weight loss medications, visit joinmidi.com today. Discover how this innovative approach can lead you to lasting success. That's joinmidi.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
Save us as a favorite on the Odyssey app. And take Boston Sports Original everywhere you go.
You're listening to Jones and Keith on WEEI.
Three balls and two strikes to Duran. The pitch is swung on and missed. He got him. And the ball game is over. A night to forget for the Red Sox. But hopefully a night to remember for Coop. The fireworks explode. 11-1 Chicago. Sox need a bounce back tomorrow in a big-time way.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. Red Sox avoid the sweep yesterday. Garrett Crochet, dominant, as he's been for much of the start to his Red Sox career, flirting with a no-hitter. Had one into the eighth inning before we lost it. Cora pulled him after 96 pitches, which bothered me, but at the end of the day, no harm, no foul. You can jump in on the Red Sox. Our discussions as well about the Masters. Rory attempting to choke it away before breaking through and getting the career slam. Are you happy for him? And on top of that, Greg's report that somebody's resigning in the Bruins front office on Wednesday. You can jump in on all of that here on Jones and Keith. Something to mix in. And yes. I was surprised to read this today, Keith. ESPN did a watchability ranking, almost like the league pass rankings that we've talked about before.
Oh, yeah.
In the NBA. Who
yeah.
does those? Simmons?
Simmons has, yeah.
So same idea, right? They have a bunch of different categories, star power, young talent, base running, defense, all this stuff.
All right.
They have 30 teams in the bigs. They rank from 30 all the way down to 1. The Dodgers, for instance, are the most watchable team in baseball.
Makes sense.
Any idea where the Red Sox check in?
1 being good,
1
being,
being
the
best,
worst.
The Dodgers, 30, I don't recall who they are being the worst.
12?
Yes. 2.
I'm sorry, what?
2.
I've watched all their games this year. They're the second... Have they watched them play? They boot the ball around. They can't hit.
This must have been written before last week.
I would imagine
seriously.
It was written before the White Sox series, and they just
They're
had it ready
two?
To go. On, this is the justification.
What the heck?
The Red Sox are oozing with talent on the position player side. Abreu. By the way, I wouldn't start with Willy Abreu.
Well,
as good
maybe
as
it's alphabetical.
I maybe.
Abreu.
Hang on. Let's
Bregman,
check that out.
Devers.
Christian Campbell. Campbell.
See.
2. Rafaela.
What?
3. Then plus Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer in AAA.
Oh, so they go young guns first.
Jaron Duran was last year's breakout star, a guy who did everything, hitting, defense, running the bases. Bregman and Devers have done it for years, and Crochet gives Boston a Cy Young candidate. I don't know how good the Red Sox will be.
Well, this isn't that. This is watchability.
Walker Buehler looks shaky, and the back of the bullpen has to prove itself, but this is going to be an entertaining team. The second most watchable in baseball, according to ESPN.
I kind of felt that way at the start of the year. I don't know if I would have put him 2 or not, but I definitely... get where he's coming from, but through 17 games, they're not the most entertaining.
They didn't feel very watchable this week.
No.
With all the lack of offense and...
They don't hit home runs.
The chilly weather and their faces are all covered because of their face masks, which doesn't make them very watchable on top of it. And they lost a million games this week. They didn't do anything on offense this week. They didn't feel very watchable.
They're 21st in home runs?
Yeah.
Like, that's not great.
I like home runs. Chicks dig the long ball, and so does Jones. I like home runs. That doesn't make them watchable.
They'll steal a bag, which I like.
They'll swipe you a bag.
Trevor Story having a good... Don't sleep on him. 30-30 this year?
No.
How many games?
If you remember the old basketball cards would do like their per 40 minute numbers, which were so stupid.
It would melt my brain. I'm like, wait a minute, that guy averaged 25 a game? Right. You're like, no, he could have.
Right.
He might have.
Bill Winnington averaged 25 a game? No. These are his per 40 numbers.
Yeah.
If you did Trevor Story's per 162, yeah, he'll probably go 30-30. I don't think he's going to get to 120. Never mind 162.
He's on pace right now for 29 dongs.
Oh, so not even.
No, he's on pace for 29.
But close.
Yeah.
This week he's coming around a little bit.
He is. But he'll run. He'll steal you a bag. But, no, like, watching a team, like, butcher routine plays or, like, you know, that's not entertaining.
No.
You want to see some web gems. Now, Rafaela has had a couple this year.
Yes.
Willier Abreu had a great throwout. Like, there have been some highlights. But you can't lose 2 out of 3 to the White Sox because also winning is entertaining. And right now they've lost more games than they've won. They have a million errors. They strike out all the time. Now the Dodgers strike out a lot too, but it is offset by the sheer amount of home runs and runs that they're scoring.
Yeah, and let me tell you, even that started to correct a little bit with LA. I looked these up earlier in the show. Let me get them for you again.
They're still third most strikeouts, I mean.
But the team that the Red Sox are ahead of in both strikeouts and errors, which continued this weekend,
yeah,
are the 3-12 Colorado Rockies. The Red Sox have 19 errors compared to 15 for Colorado, so they have a big lead there.
Yeah.
Strikeouts, it's 165-160, but the Red Sox have played 2 extra games. Rockies have only played 15 games. But they lead the bigs in errors and strikeouts. That continued this weekend. Again, it was 11 strikeouts, 5 errors on Friday, 11 strikeouts, no errors Saturday. Yesterday was a little better and what I would consider reasonable. 7 strikeouts, no errors. That's offensive strikeouts. And the errors yesterday for the Red Sox. I mean, they're the worst in the big leagues in both of those categories.
Tough go.
They're a game below 500. I asked you this earlier. I'll ask you again, Keith. How much of that, like the general sloppiness, the approach at the plate, and the mistakes in the field, how much of that is on the manager, Alex Cora, who for the last couple of years got a free pass because roster was bad. Now the roster's better. It's more talented. And the same issues. They were third in baseball, rather, in errors the last 2 years, I think. Or was it second? I'll fact check myself. But they were high up in errors the last 2 years. You'd explain away the roster. They were second in strikeouts last year when Breslow and the driveline guys came in after being more middle of the pack in 2023. So how much of that is a reflection on Cora and the job he's done?
Yeah, so they were second last year and second the year before, and they're currently first in just total errors.
But again, and you could explain that away. I really didn't, but you could say, well, they're patching it together. You see a lot of this in the clubhouse. Guys are hurt. Trevor Story goes down.
Yeah.
It's a rotating door of guys at shortstop and second base. You're constantly trying to piece it together. I mean, this year in theory, Bregman's been should be an upgrade at third. He hasn't been great, but he should be an upgrade at third. Story's been healthy. Can't blame that. Their outfield is all gold glove caliber. So why all the errors? I mean, on some level, I look back at Cora.
So I don't put much of it on Cora only because he made the decision to take Devers out of there and was one of the reasons why you were so high in errors over the last several years. Devers would lead the league at third base anyway. Every single year, you had different issues at shortstop when Story trying to replace Story over the last couple of years. So the left side of your infield on paper is a lot better, but Bregman got off to a bad start, has 3 errors, which leads the team. Christian Campbell is really the only guy out there that you question, is this his position, present, future? Like, what do we do with him? But you want his bat in there. Most days, the outfield, I wouldn't change it.
No.
The first baseman, struggling, but like, okay, that's your first baseman. The catcher position is what it is. I don't really put it much on Cora. Like, unless... Is he supposed to be out there, like, showing them the fundamentals of the game and all that stuff? Like, these are pro baseball players.
It makes me wonder what they're doing in the spring when you're second, first in errors. I know we're only, whatever, I'm going to get early. 17 games in. Mm-hmm. But right now, you're lapping the field when it comes to errors. It makes me wonder what they're doing, but you're right. I mean, the players are guilty of it on some level. on Campbell specifically, is he a Cora pick to get in there at second base? Is that a Driveline Breslow analytics thing?
See, that's the thing is I think Cora, like all managers, we give him a lot of credit for being able to have the former player background combined with being very open to stats, but also you feel like, hey, maybe there's like a gut feeling that he can make, right? He's sort of blending all like new school, old school stuff for a baseball manager. But still, like all other baseball managers, he is listening to all the stat guys. And if the Driveline thing, and you're right, Campbell definitely could have been, hey, we love this guy. He's going to sign a contract with us. He's your second baseman. And even still, I think he's only, two of the errors, right? Like, it's really spread out. Like, everybody's got one. Right. Everybody's got one or two.
I mean, Bregman should have four. I think he's still at three,
I think. He's got three, but right.
And Campbell could have more. Campbell had the brutal play where Story got the error because he got it flipped to him so late because Campbell didn't step on second base.
Yeah,
so there's more plays on top of it. I mean, on some level, that's a reflection on the manager. Never mind giving him the weather excuse he was giving him in Toronto. Where, oh boy, I mean, it was still a rough day out there. It's still pretty, hopefully we get better weather in Chicago. And then it's cold in Chicago, and you've already given the players the excuse. So on some level, Cora's on the list. We can debate where he is on the list. But on some level, he should be on there. And, you know, the whole approach for the Red Sox, I'm with you on the strikeouts. I think that's...
It's worse.
That's more on the Driveline analytics Breslow guys than that is on Cora. But still, Cora had a chance to walk away last year. He didn't have to come back and take their money. And if you really
give him good money.
Fundamentally rejected the way they're playing baseball here, and he really deep down disagreed with it and thought it wasn't the way to win, he could have walked away. And from what I'm told, he would have had his pick of a litter for other jobs.
Yeah.
Pick of the litter for other jobs.
I'm not sure that's really the case.
I always thought that was overblown. The Yankees didn't open up.
Maybe he knew.
The Phillies didn't open up. The Dodgers didn't open up.
Yeah.
But, you know, if he really disagreed with it and thought this wasn't the way to play baseball, then he could have walked away from it, and he took their money.
No, he did. But doesn't it seem counter to how he wants to play the game?
I mean, he told afternoons last week he hates strikeouts. So that's what he says.
They strike out all the time.
His actions are admittedly a little different.
Yeah, and I just wonder, like, at what point is he going to have to talk to certain guys? Because it is a weird kind of thing. Like, is this really what's best for the entire roster, like top to bottom? Like, shouldn't each guy be a little bit different in how their game is? Some guys, probably are better off hitting the ball in the air. I feel like Jaron, like you have all these speed guys. Now, maybe that's too old school, but forever in baseball, like speed guys don't hit the ball in the air. Hit the ball on the ground. Use your legs. Jaron Duran made a all-star game out of it last year by slapping the ball in the outfield and grabbing an extra base, and then from there, you're already in scoring position. Now it's either strikeout or fly out. That's basically every at-bat for these guys.
Well, and one thing Cora can't control, and I'll give him credit for this, he can control the lineup. I mean, I think to a degree. I mean, I'm sure analytics in the front office has a say in that too. But
Casas down finally.
Casas dropped down yesterday.
Yeah.
He hit sixth. Abreu moved up. So I think there's something to that. And I wonder how long until we see Roman Anthony and Marcelo Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, Keith, we've been talking about it a lot. Like, well, where are they going to play and who's going to play their way out of a job? And will it be an injury to Story? Will Rafaela not hit? Blah, blah, blah. Maybe we just need to look at it as if the team keeps scuffling and they're 500 and underachieving, these guys may bang the door down and come in for something, you know, more external than, you know, an injury or poor play in front of them. They may just force their way in because the team needs a shakeup. Now, I was discouraged by some of what I read from Craig Breslow to Mass Live, Chris Cotillo this weekend. He was asked about Anthony and when Anthony will come up. He said there are certain players, and we're hopeful and optimistic, we have a handful of those, who create their own timeline. But he said, but then the bulk of the guys who get to the big leagues do so because an opportunity arises on the big league club. I think this will likely be some balance of those things. So there will likely be some balance of those things. That doesn't sound like a GM who's ready to promote Roman Anthony. But if they keep scuffling and they're losing to Tampa and they're losing to the White Sox and they lost to Toronto last week and they're peeing away these games where they should have had a fast start, I wonder if there is external pressure to get those guys up regardless of how guys are playing in front of them.
Do you think Meyer and Anthony are more likely to get called up due to injury or bad performance by other starters?
Based on that answer from Breslow, probably injury.
Injury.
Yeah.
And it's only a matter of time, too. I mean, it's baseball. And I feel like this is what Trevor Story did a few years ago when he had that really hot wing, got really good. Not that I'm predicting injury, but it's just the track record for him has been he hasn't been healthy like since he's gotten here. And even when they acquired him, they ignored the red flags that surrounded him with his injuries. So if it's not him, it might be somebody else. And then that's when we see Anthony or Meyer. But also, this team is too good or should be, where you shouldn't have to rely on those two guys to create a spark. Like, top to bottom, the lineup doesn't seem to have many holes in it, but
it has plenty these days.
Well, I mean,
but
your best guy starts the year 0-for-20, right, and then everybody takes turns. Like, you can't have more than two guys hot in the lineup at any given time. They haven't been able to score runs over the last week, so maybe you do need Meyer or Anthony, but you shouldn't. I mean, top to bottom, you have the catcher spot, and that's about it. And I guess Rafaela, but he should be making up for it in the outfield.
617-779-7937. You can jump in on the Red Sox. How much of it's on Cora? And when do the young kids start knocking on the door? Is that now to give this team a spark for their lackluster 8-9 start? You can jump in here. Shedeur Sanders appears to be dropping. Dion, maybe or not, happy about it. Is it good or bad news for the Patriots that Shedeur is dropping in the draft? We'll get to that next.
Watch us. Love us. Just follow WEEI on Twitch. Jones and Keefe.
On WEEI.
Jones and Keefe here on WEEI. That was Tom Pelissero, NFL Network, on Shedeur Sanders, where he could go in next week's draft. Draft day comes your way 10 days, 7 hours, 11 minutes, and 11 seconds. Make that 10, 9, 8 seconds from now.
Wow.
If you're curious, we've given you a couple of different draft segments here today. Our mock draft Monday, we did that at 10:45. It's on the Odyssey app, AUDACY. Get that on your phone. It's free, easy. Take it with you wherever you go. You can also listen to the first installment of Hate It or Love It, Draft Prospect with Travis Hunter. Would you love that pick? Would you hate that pick?
You notice how Jones calls that Hate It or Love It, where most would probably call it Love It or Hate It?
I think a lot of people would do that.
Yeah.
Hate It or Love It.
Love it or hate it.
The underdog's on top.
I just say hate it or love it because of the song.
Exactly.
All right.
But maybe it's my glass half empty, glass half full way of looking at it.
That's a good observation there.
You're
Keith. Leading the people by putting hate it first.
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of people love it next week. A lot of people love the Travis Hunter segment.
As they should.
Or pick, rather.
The pick. Of course they should.
So they can vote at Jones and Keefe. That's up on socials, Twitter and Instagram. Vote along. It's a very popular pick at number 4. Should he get there? Which he likely won't. We'll be tracking this going into the draft, all the various prospects they could take at pick number 4. Shedeur Sanders falling. I can see this one a couple of different ways, Keith.
Okay.
You wanted him to go in the top 3.
Two. Yeah, top 3. Yeah.
That would have been ideal.
Yes.
If it goes Ward and Sanders, and then maybe even Jackson Dart, as you've said. 1, 2, 3. I mean, that'd be the best of all worlds.
Yes.
But two in the top 3 felt realistic.
Right.
Given the needs of the Browns and Giants, we know Ward's going 1, it seems. So that would have been ideal. Sanders falling could still work out for the Patriots. You could raffle off the pick at 4 to a team looking to move up the board. Maybe that's New Orleans at 9. Maybe other teams could be looking to move up the board. And, you know, New Orleans gets a little squirrely about it and they want to move up to number 4. As Pelissero highlights there, maybe the Raiders are in play at pick 6 for Shedeur Sanders. They need to get in front of that team. There's only a couple options to do that. And maybe the Pats at 4 are that pick. The other way to look at it is Sanders falling is bad news. Maybe he goes to New Orleans at 9. They now need a quarterback, it sounds, because Derek Carr, who isn't great anyways, is now hurt and may miss a chunk of time. They may have to draft a quarterback. So now you're going to have Hunter and Carter off the board, likely in that order, and you're taking the best of what's left at 4. How do you view Sanders sliding, good or bad?
Obviously terrible. Like, if this is all true, I still maintain with 10 days to go, teams end up, when it's forced to it, they always overreact and overdraft quarterbacks. So even if Shedeur Sanders is on like a big board scale, the 20th, 25th best prospect, that doesn't mean he's going 20th or 25th, right? That still means he could go in the top 3. I still would think there's a possibility of that, just because the teams picking above the Patriots all desperately need a quarterback. So how cute do you want to get with it? You know, like, I brought up the Kenny Pickett draft because that's really the one that stands out where, man, he should not have been a first rounder, but a team that needed a quarterback ended up taking him in the first round. But he probably was not the 20th best prospect. Mm-hmm. He was probably like the 50th best prospect and got overdrafted by at least a round, maybe 2 rounds. Whereas I think Shedeur Sanders probably is a first round pick.
I like him.
So the chances of those guys getting passed over multiple times, I still think is rare. Now, maybe there's the shot where, all right, Jackson Dart becomes the guy everybody falls in love with. Fine. Doesn't really matter for us as Patriots fans who goes ahead of him. I think Sanders is a better pro prospect than Dart is, but I don't care if Dart ends up going 2 or 3. I just can't imagine. Like, the mock draft we looked at today had only two quarterbacks in the first round, and it was, what, 1-9. I still think it's going to be higher than that. I really do. Most drafts in recent years have always been way more than that.
I'd be pretty surprised at this point. And I don't like him as a prospect. I don't think you're very fond of him either. But it seems like there's a lot of love for Jackson Dart out there.
Yeah.
At this point, I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go in the first round. That doesn't mean he goes early, in the top 10. But I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go in the first
round. Last year at this time, it was pretty unanimous that it was going to be quarterback, 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 1-3. There was some debate on whether it was going to be Daniels or May at 2. I think after that, there was this push that people, the Patriots like J.J. McCarthy. But we all kind of eventually laughed that off. But I don't think anybody expected him to really go top 10, let alone Michael Penix and Bo Nix.
No one expected Penix to go there. There was a lot of talk if the Patriots passed on Drake May at 3 and they took Marvin Harrison or they took Joe Alt, they could get those guys at the top of round 2.
Right. I wanted a Harrison-Nix combo. I was like, oh, they could get this. And you're like, there's more teams that want quarterbacks. But 6 in the top 12? Now, that's going to be one of those years that I think is sort of like you kind of prop that up. And I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take for 6 quarterbacks to get taken this year. It'll probably a long time. But you only need 2 for the Patriots. I still think that happens.
Do you make anything of the tweets over the weekend? Lou Riddick has had a bunch of odd comments about Shadur and kind of hinting that he knows something. So he tweeted out, this was on Friday, the 9th pick is going to be all kinds of interesting. And then he has fingers crossed emoji. Dion quote tweeted that with the eyeballs. So I have trouble translating these things sometimes. The implication seems to be Shadur's dropping. He's in play at pick number 9. That's where Dion wants him to go. Lou Riddick has had the report before that he does not want Shadur to go in the top 3 and that Dion doesn't want to see him go in the top 3. They'd actually like him to fall. So the implication being Sanders and pick 9 to New Orleans is kind of where they want him to land. Do you put any stock in that? Is that just weird social media games? Like, what is that?
So you said Dion tweeted the eyeball
emoji? Dion hit the eyeball emoji.
You know what that means?
What?
Send me naked pictures of you.
Oh, my gosh.
That is what that is. So he's asking Lou Riddick.
For nudes.
That was like.
I think.
He meant to do that in the DMs, and he's actually asking Lou Riddick.
Right.
For some below the belt shots.
That's how I would view it.
Okay, that's interesting.
But and I guess like.
I said I have trouble translating, so I'm happy I brought you in.
So does New Orleans. Is a much better place to go than Cleveland or New York, I guess?
I don't think so.
Wouldn't the higher you get drafted, the better it is?
Well, I mean, you could make a case. Pittsburgh at 21 would be a great landing spot.
That's a team
that was in the playoffs a year ago, and they just got DK Metcalf. So you want to fall far, fine.
NFL teams turn around.
Or like the Rams, you want to go sit and learn from Matt Stafford. I wouldn't want to if I were a first-round pick, but maybe you could spin that.
Like the nature of the NFL, like 5 years ago, there wasn't a better place in the world than New England.
I don't think New Orleans is any better off than Cleveland or the Giants. I think they're all roughly the same, but maybe there's an indication there. They're just trying to, manifest that.
He's
not falling. Yeah. We want to go number 9. Yeah. That's the place we want. They're just trying to soften the landing on what's going to be some
immediate bad press. Do you want the
most recent
Dion tweet?
Yes. More eyeballs?
From 9:30 this morning.
Okay.
Stop rushing and take your time. This next move can't be fast and it has to be right. When we rush, we tend to forget, overlook, and lose focus on the true things that matter. Let's relax, lock in, and take a deep breath, then go.
Okay.
We got this, baby. Let's do this. Hashtag Coach Prime.
I like Twitter better when they limited it to 140 characters.
That's too much.
That's too much. You shouldn't be allowed to go on that long in one tweet.
It's way too
How
much.
Long was that?
That was a long tweet. That was a long tweet for Coach Prime. He is verified, so yeah, you should just go
you
on
can really
days.
Go.
Just go for days.
Buck Wild there.
Uh-huh.
So, Shadur sliding, is that a good thing or a bad thing for the Patriots? I think you can spin it one way or the other, but I would tend to agree with Keith. I don't think it's great that he is reportedly falling in these drafts, if you believe the Twitter flirting with Lou Riddick and Deion Sanders. Next level flirting. I didn't realize
it's
what was going
top.
On there. It was right under my nose.
Uh-huh.
617-779-7937. We'll mix some thoughts in on that, and we'll get back to Jaylen Brown. He had injections in his knee leading into the playoffs, according to ESPN. Is it time to get nervous for Jaylen Brown and worried about the Celtics? We'll do that next.